Paul's Guitarcast, dein Gitarrenpodcast. Regelmäßig, unregelmäßig, immer donnerstags. Guitar Talk, Repair Shop Geschichten, Lebensweisheiten. Mit Gästen aus der Gitarrenszene oder nur charmante Monologe. Präsentiert von Paul's Repair Shop. Better call Paul, weil du deine Gitarre liebst.
Alright, guys, welcome back to your favorite and your lovely Guitarcast, Paul's Guitarcast. You guys mentioned it. It's the first time I do it in English, so I'm just a little bit nervous, but I think we will have a good time. And last episode, I had a nice and nerdy talk with David Schneider from the Butcher Sisters about 80s shreds, 80s guitars and music stuff like that. And today I'm very happy to have Wallace Bird live from Berlin in my lovely podcast. Hi.
Hi. Hallihallo.
Dein How English are you?
Prima. Ist perfekt. Ah,
thank you very much. Oh, I'm fine. How are you? You're good?
I'm very good. I'm very good. I went swimming this morning, so I'm feeling very good. Yeah.
Oh, it's so damn hot outside, right, in Berlin?
Lovelish.
Yeah.
And I live on the fifth floor and all I have is windows. So it's like 40 degrees here in, yeah.
Oh, welcome to my life.
Yeah. Same with you.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
So I've got a repair shop for guitars and basses, and I'm in the cellar. So it's a little bit colder than outside. It's a pretty nice temperature. Oh, but I went outside a few minutes ago and I thought, oh my God, and I think tomorrow it's going to be hotter and hotter and hotter. So
easily we'll melt. We're not made of sugar, as you say in Germany.
Yeah, definitely. I went to Berlin last weekend.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, I had a show in Cassiopeia. Was pretty fun. But there wasn't so many people. It's Berlin. You have so much where you can go, you can enjoy shows. And but what a nice weekend. But to be honest, I'm not the Berlin guy.
Fair enough.
You feel me?
I absolutely feel you. I mean, I have friends that I often think that they would be really suited to this town, and then they get here and they're like, no, I'm not at all. It's you either love it or you don't.
Yeah, it's nice for a trip, and I'm very glad to be back at home. But next weekend, or over the next weekend, I'm back in Berlin again, so Berlin could be my second favorite place. Maybe we will see. Yeah, I will join a concert from the Beatsteaks. They play at Wuhlheide, and I'm so excited because I love the Beatsteaks.
Yeah,
and I don't love Berlin, but I love the Beatsteaks in Berlin. So,
of course, isn't that their hometown, Berlin?
Yeah, everybody's from Berlin.
Outrageous, yeah.
Die Ärzte, Beatsteaks, Rammstein. So I think everybody's from Berlin. Why do you live in Berlin? I think you're actually from Ireland, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, I moved to Berlin because the very first time I visited here, about 15 years ago, it blew my mind in so many different ways.
Okay.
I walked into a friend's apartment, and her apartment was really high ceilings, and she had her art all over the walls. She had a piano. It was an open plan kitchen. It was completely different architecture to Ireland.
Okay.
And you're also not allowed to put up paintings and walls in rented apartments in Ireland. You're not allowed to do anything. So you're living in this suspended adulthood until you buy your own place. But she was like, no, we can knock down a wall as long as we put it back exactly the way it was when we got it. And I was like, oh, that's a beautiful way to live. So that was the first thing.
Berlin is very open-minded. So definitely.
Yeah.
And to be honest, I've never been to Ireland, but it's one of my bucket list. I have to go to Ireland. So, Berlin is, it's a capital, and the people are open-minded. The people are sometimes a little bit strange, but not strange, you know what I mean? So, and you can do whatever you want to do. So, and I can feel it. Yeah.
Yeah, there's nobody cares what you do here. There's in London.
Yeah, and how you look.
Yeah, yeah. Nobody cares. There's far more important things in the world than to care about who you are or what you do, where how you look. Yeah, it's fairly classless and egoless, actually. Cities go, and you can't ask for more. Like I lived in London for years, and I lived in America in Los Angeles for a very short time, and it's just not my kind of people. It's this oberflächlich, this kind of shallow thing which I'm not into, and I really love dirty towns.
But LA isn't it dirty as well, or is it?
It's dirty in a different way. I think it's. I mean, there's so much homelessness, and the gang situation is surprising.
Yeah.
But it's trying so hard to be really beautiful, and I don't know. I didn't feel a soul there. I found that it was just kind of shallow. I was young as well. I was really young, so I guess if I go back. I'm going in January. I guess I'm going to get a completely different feel again. Yeah.
You go back in January just for a visit, or do you want to live again in LA? So okay.
No.
It's just
very happy.
Straight answer.
Yes. Yeah. No. I'm very happy in Berlin.
Okay.
No, just we're doing a tour in January, so I'll be back.
Yeah, a good point. You're doing a tour in America, right?
Yes, in January.
In January, okay. Yeah, hopefully. But I think COVID restrictions in the US are not so is it restricted as in Germany? So, yeah.
I mean, it's a whole half a year away. I have no idea what's going to happen, you know? I mean...
Me either, yeah.
The most plans that I'm making at the moment is to say that I really hope that it's going to
happen. Yeah,
planning. Yeah,
you just can't plan from day to day or from month to month. Nobody knows what's in autumn. Nobody knows what's in winter.
Yeah.
So I know the situation as well. So But I think it's gonna be happen. I'm a positive guy. So.
Yeah. Yes. Stay positive. Keep our fingers crossed. Yeah.
Is it a whole complete US tour from east to west, or?
Yeah. What? So we go down as far as Nashville.
Nashville, Music City.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
We go from New York to Philadelphia, up to Detroit, Chicago, down as far as Nashville, and then over to Seattle, Portland, and Los Angeles, and then we finish up in New York again. We go back to New York.
Just nice music city, Seattle, grunge city. So
yeah,
nice bands and
absolutely
Nashville, Gibson Factory. Mm-hmm. So just music scene in Nashville is so fucking great.
I believe that they have the quietest room in the world. In Nashville.
Isn't it all right?
I think it's something like it's minus 18 decibels or something like that. You know, it's a vacuum.
They
created a vacuum so that they can test Fender amps.
Okay.
Specifically. So maybe I'll go, but actually I don't like quiet, so I don't think I'd be in that, actually.
You need surroundings, you need voices, you need okay.
Absolutely.
Sometimes I definitely like the quiet and just no noise. And I'm both of it. I'm a loud guy and I'm a quiet guy. And I'm a shy guy.
What a one. We have best of both worlds, I think, specifically in Germany. I think it's such a beautiful country. It allows people to be as loud or as quiet as they want to be. I love this country. Living here for on and off. Well, I'm in Berlin 10 years now. And just that you know, I can speak German, but I'm really pleased that I can do the interview in English, actually.
It was my wish as well. So it's
great.
All
right. Good.
Yeah. Is it a headline tour you do in the United States? Congratulations.
Yeah. It's you know, it's take our time. I didn't tour in America. The last time I toured was just a small support tour with my friend Anais Mitchell, and we played barns, actually farm barns. We did six shows around Vermont. That's where she's from. And I did like a New York date and a date in Baltimore. So this is the second tour that I've done in America. It's just, I don't like to go places unless I have a nice team built up. And, I mean, who wants to travel for, you know, 8-9 hours every day to get to a venue that doesn't give a fuck if you're there? So we've been.
I did it last weekend. So yeah.
Look, there's nothing wrong with it. We've all done it. We continue to. But I mean, it has to be done too. Yeah.
Well. Yeah.
Yeah. This is it. You got a trip to Berlin, like yeah.
It's okay. I mean, we love to make music and we love to play for a nice audience, but it's sometimes pretty hard to sit in a van or to sit in a car about 8 or 9 hours, and it can be really, really tough.
Yeah.
Except you are in the good position to have a nightliner, and you have a big crew, you have a tech, you have a backliner, and then it's pretty easy going for you. But when you have to organize it all by yourself, it's a really hard job.
Yeah, I'm always so impressed by freelance totally independent artists that manage themselves and book themselves. I'm always like really so impressed. Yeah.
Because in my opinion, I think the management, when you do it all by yourself, it's more than the music. The music is okay. At one point, you can do music, but the other point is you have to manage everything. Mm-hmm. You have to manage every venue. You have to manage, I don't know, the promotion. And that's pretty tough.
I mean, artists are not designed for this originally. We weren't designed for it, but I see in the last 10 years, ever since statistics through Spotify or Tidal or Apple Music, that they give you the statistics now that artists have, through necessity, have begun to book themselves in a cleverer, take care of and manage themselves in a more clever way. I mean, labels are not taking on new artists anymore. They like the artist to take all the risk, make all the effort to build up a brand for themselves or an audience for themselves, and then they fucking jump on board. So I see that there's a whole other different echelon of musician now that is really business savvy, and because they have to be, because there's so few alleyways to make money, or you have to be so specific and know what you're doing before you do it. And every little thing hangs on a thread. If one concert gets fucked, then quite a lot of the tour gets fucked. So it's a different echelon of a business person that a creative person is now, which I'm not. I'm in the old school of like, I'm very lucky that I have people taking care of the business or people taking care of the booking. Because I can't do that. And that's why I'm so impressed by the new generation of musicians that are coming out now that are really taking care of that and do it well. Yeah, they're really showing a lot. Yeah.
In a way, it's a little bit sad because the new generation of artists say they have to manage all it. They don't have the choice. So you need social media, you need Instagram, you need Facebook, or let's call it Boomer Book, and so it's definitely necessary. You need TikTok. You have to record everything in your life just for the audience. And I don't know. I don't want to play this game. And about you have to check that your music is listened in a Spotify playlist. So that's very important. And I'm the guy like, okay, is it so important that my music have to be in a Spotify playlist, but yeah, it's definitely important. So, but I'm very old school, as you too, and it's not my business. I just like to have a management too, because with my band we have a management. It's an independent label, but the independent label nowadays, it's not the same a couple of years ago. You have to pay for independent label, you have to pay for everything, you have to pay for promotion, you have to pay for bookings, you have to pay for you want to play concerts, so it's pay to play, and we don't earn that money. So it's to be an independent and small artist, it's so hard. So
I'm so excited about where it goes, actually, because they're independent artists or new artists, basically, is what I mean. Mm-hmm. They're building up their skill set in a far broader way than we have. Like the business skills of the new generation is really fantastic, because I mean they're technology natives as well. They know how to get the information and use the information. And also they're inventing a whole new way to receive art. I mean, if we didn't, we've got NFTs now, and merchandise has come back in a big way. And vinyl, for example, is coming back in a big way. But it's the young people, the new generation, I'm going to say, is like this invention out of necessity, trying to figure out a way to make music important again, like not just monetarily, but in a really physical way to make music important again, that people feel that they should support the arts and support the artists rather than just expect everything for free. Mm-hmm. I'm fucking so excited about this generation. I'm only in the business like less than 20 years, you know, and I'm not 40 yet, you know. And I'm going to die on stage. I'm hoping to get to like 80 years old and die on the stage. So I still have an entire life of music to live.
Yeah, definitely.
And I'm going to continue to learn. And I don't expect things to go well for me all the time. I really, really don't. And that's one thing that always keeps me learning and keeps me kind of on top of that.
It's a process. So you can learn from the new generation, and you will see what the new generation they will build. And I'm pretty excited too, definitely.
Also, the music is really taking a turn. The music is becoming very, very interesting. It's stuff that I don't fucking understand, which is like, I have to get in there. It's kind of, it's agitating, and I don't understand it. And it really makes me have to listen and get into that world, because art is reflective of what the people are going through. And if the reflection of the new generation's art, such as like trap or grime or the whole new genre spectrum that I am listening to now, it's like, okay, it's really dark because it sounds kind of hopeless. It's like perfect, because what millennials and what boomers have handed over to in Western society, handed over to Generation X or Z, is a bit fucking hopeless, to be honest, isn't it? It's a bit like we have to rebuild everything.
Yeah. Definitely.
Everything. Yeah.
So yeah, we've got so much troubles going on, climate change. We've got COVID as well. Maybe we've got COVID forever. So, and we will grow with it. Yeah. And the younger guys, they have to manage it. And we are the generation like, okay, we can look at it, but the younger generation, they've got the problem. So and they've got the anger in their stomach, and I think they can canalize it and can push it into music and into good art. Like the early 90s about Rage Against the Machine. It's they had a message, and they put their message into music. So
yeah,
and maybe that can hopefully manage the younger or the next generation. So
I mean, I'm listening to a lot of Berlin made hip hop or trip hop.
You like hip hop and trip hop? I'm a big fan of trip hop.
Are you?
I love trip hop. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. I'm getting into it because it's like it's not a world that I come from.
Okay.
But I'm really, really into it. It's like watching a movie when you listen to music that wouldn't be your world. You're like entering into somebody's psyche. You're entering into a generational psyche. It's fucking it's excellent. It's all about frequency. And music is always about frequency, but it's about how do you say the crassest thing and push the envelope about what you can say online or out loud. And it's this kind of like, we're all going to die tomorrow vibe. So I'm going to say what I feel right now, which is just astounding. I think it's really, really powerful. Yeah.
Yeah. For me, my all-time favorite trip hop band is definitely Massive Attack. So it's Massive. What do we have? Tricky. It's all UK things. Love it. Boards of Canada. You know Boards of Canada?
No.
You have to check Boards of Canada.
Okay.
It's like when you hear the music of Boards of Canada, it's like a melancholic trip into your childhood.
Oh.
I don't know how the guys made it, but it's like a old Polaroid photo, and you look at it where you were with your parents or your friends in childhood, and that's the spirit of Boards of Canada. It's
sadly
so nice music.
Are they from Canada?
I guess. I really don't know. but I think that maybe they're from Canada. Yeah.
Bots, BOTS, yeah.
Yeah, it's like trip hop ambient music.
Okay. Nice.
There's a nice Spotify playlist.
Okay.
It's just called trip hop, and you've got you can discover so many good artists that are into trip hop. So just check it.
And tell me what other new, like fresh artists are you into? Could you?
I'm such a old school guy. New artist. Mm-hmm. It's for me, it's a new artist. It's about a couple of years ago, I discovered the band Daughter. I mean, Daughter is, they just were not in my focus. So, and about 4 or 5 years, I just recognized Daughter. And that was for me, oh man, I love this music. So, but I'm sometimes really old school, and so I'm tired and I'm not really checking new music. I'm sorry.
all good. But you're an unbelievable music lover, right?
Yeah, so definitely.
How did you turn to music during Corona? For example, like, how did that change your listening, or did it change your listening, or did you? I'm asking because I went back to my teenagehood. What did you do something like that? Do you do anything like that?
Let me think about it. One of my favorite bands is Death Cab for Cutie. You know Death Cab for Cutie? It's So I love this band so bad, and Ben Gibbard. He made a kind of a streaming concert like every day. So, and it was just Ben Gibbard with his acoustic guitar, and he played every Death Cab for Cutie song every day. Yeah. And it was a live stream. So, and that was for me, I was in lockdown, the first lockdown here in April 2020. Or was it March 2020? I don't know, March or April 2020. Mm-hmm. And I had to close my shop as well. So I didn't have customers. And I was like, okay, there's nothing to do. So, you couldn't do anything. Mm-hmm. And I just streamed every concert from Death Cab for Cutie.
Nice.
And I was soaked into this melancholic and Seattle band world. And I think I listened more into music. I don't know how to describe it. What's the right word?
You became more into it somehow?
Yeah, that's it. I became more into it, yeah. Mm-hmm. Not like I'm just working and I hear music. It was more active thing to hear music. Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, that's it.
Very good. Yeah.
Yeah.
And like, when did you first find out about Death Cab for Cutie?
It's a funny story. About 10 years ago, it was 2011. A friend of mine said to me, "Yeah, Paul, you want to come to Amsterdam? That's playing Death Cab for Cutie." Mm-hmm. And I was like, "I don't know the band. Okay, let's have a trip to Amsterdam." So we went to Amsterdam, we were four guys, and I was the one. I just listened to the first song, and then, shame on me, I went outside to the location, and I didn't get back. I was so, okay, first song is okay, but I don't want to hear it anymore. Mm-hmm. And the whole time I was outside, was smoking cigarettes, had a conversation with the other guy, and then the concert was over.
Yeah.
And about, I mean, 2 or 3 weeks later, I listened to one of my favorite Death Cab songs. It's Bixby Canyon Bridge. And I didn't know that's Death Cab for Cutie. So, and I was like, okay, who is this band? So, and a friend of mine said, yeah, that's Death Cab for Cutie. You miss because you're just standing outside the venue. I was like, fuck, shame on me. So, and that's, since that day, I'm one of the biggest fan of Death Cab. So, yeah.
Yeah, very good. Very good.
Yeah.
So something about it coming back to your comfort time during Corona.
Yeah.
Yeah, feeling like sadness and comfort in your sadness. I started listening to all this really, really lo-fi folk music from London again.
Okay.
You know.
Can you say artists, for example?
One of them is... They're Mendicant. They're nobody's ever heard of them. They're just a band that played in small pubs around London.
Okay. Yeah.
But it reminds me of a specific time. It's like it's like folk grunge basically. Really, really good. It's people that I love it. It's people that play 1,000 instruments, and they don't play any of them very well at all, but the way they bring it all together is just so perfect, because they really mean the feelings. There's not a lot of lyrics, there's just long, you know, they mix like slide guitar with a glockenspiel and a really slow beat on brushes, and just very kind of like depressing grunge folk, I suppose.
that's a nice mix. Depression. Yeah. Okay, depressing grunge folk. All right.
Yeah. So I was thinking to myself, you know, I've just finished a record, and I was like, obviously I have tons of work to do with going on tour and getting a show together and all of that stuff.
But you finished a new record right now? All right.
I finished it, released it 2 weeks ago, and now I'm obviously in the process of putting my band together and rehearsing and getting the songs that I have written ready for stage and ready for tour.
Oh, sorry, you mean your latest record? I've listened to it today, so okay, I guess you finished just another record, so okay. I was like, okay, she's a working woman.
Oh, Jesus. I mean, I have 7 albums. I work pretty hard, but I do. I'm lazy. Yeah. I'm olympically lazy, too. But yeah, In the meantime, I realized that that's the kind of music that I'm going to write in between now and the next record. Is I'm just going to write really depressing grunge folk, just long instrumentals, and sitting in my room alone, probably smoke a joint and then, you know, go for it. And that's it.
Yeah.
Because I don't drink anymore. I don't smoke anymore. I am very clean living now. Healthy, fit, I go to the gym, all of this shit. And but there is something that the COVID pause brought out in me, which was this love for sitting down and listening to music that asks for nothing, you know?
Yeah.
It doesn't ask for anything. It's just existing because it has to. And it's a little bit depressing, and I can't. I want to do that again. Yeah.
No. I feel really bad because I smoke and I drink, and you don't smoke and drink and have this healthy lifestyle. And I'm like, I'm healthy as well. So I live almost vegan.
Nice.
And yeah, definitely. That must be. But I love to drink. I love to drink a beer or a gin tonic. And
I love to as well. I love it. You know, I mean, there's nothing bad about it. It's, you know, everything in moderation. You just have to be healthy with it. I've no problem with people drinking at all. Like, I come from a drinking environment, from a drinking background.
Okay.
Most of my career was based around, like, the start of my career was like, we'll give you a crate of beer if you play some concert. And it's like, yeah, great. Okay.
All right.
You know, I mean, in Ireland, that's a lot of the culture of where it is, unfortunately, is like repressed emotions. So we get fucking hammered drunk so that we can finally express some kind of emotion together or something. So it's... Yeah.
Wasn't it Freud who said it's not possible to get into it's just my words, isn't it? It's not possible to get into the emotional feelings of Irish people.
Yeah. I can see it every day when I'm hanging out in Ireland. The I mean, I got to say, even people my age, in Irish people have changed very much so, because let's say people who were born in the 50s or the 40s or 50s, like my parents' age.
Yeah.
It's a very, very different class of person. Work was very hard. Work was physical usually. It was like farming or mining, and there wasn't computers, let's say. It was like physical hard work. And money came into the country in around about 1970s, something like this.
Yeah.
That's when a different style of Irish person came in, which is like drinking wine. Or before that, it was like you go to the pub, you drink your Guinness, and you shut the fuck up, and you get hammered amongst people, and maybe there's a really, really good conversation, or maybe there's a fight. You know this shit.
50-50 chance of it. Yeah.
Like, that's a bit, you know, cliche, but I mean, and nowadays an Irish person is very much aware of the trauma that our parents went through, of Catholic guilt, and how that affected our daily lives and how we treat people. And so that, for example, the Irish person my age is very much working hard to get rid of that old thing and find a way to express yourself freer, even in art, especially in art and in your job, in your workplace. So it's I think I'm part of this kind of changing generation where we see the hurt and the pain, and we don't want that anymore. Nobody wants pain. Nobody wants hard work.
Yeah.
Nobody wants hard relationships. Nobody deserves it, actually. It just causes pain.
Yeah. I just, it's a couple of weeks or month ago, I watched a movie. I don't know the English title. It was called, it's based on a book, on a very popular book by an Irish artist. The German title is Die Asche meiner Mutter. You know
Angela's Ashes.
Yeah.
It's set in Limerick.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah.
Oh my God.
And I watched this movie and I was like, what the fuck?
Ireland was very different back in that day. Very different. Yeah. And you can still feel it. It's like repressed, totally oppressed by the church.
That's the clash between Protestants and Catholics. It's wow.
Oh my God. And in the end, it's not even about fucking religion. It's just about bigotry and hate. And that's my opinion. But I mean, under the guise of religion, like religion has caused so much pain in the world.
Yeah.
Especially as an Irish person. Yeah.
Yeah, I left the church 2 years ago, so I'm not a religious guy, so never been.
Yeah.
And yeah, that was a very good for me. No front to every religious people out there, but for me, it was definitely the only way I have to leave the church here in Germany. It's not, I have nothing to do with religion, with the church. I'm an artist, so that's it. And when I watched this, I mean, okay, it's a movie, but it's an autobiographical movie by the artist. What do you know the name of the? It's a very popular. I just,
the writer of Angela's Ashes. I don't know, love. No, sorry.
Okay, easy. But the movie, I was like, oh my gosh, what is it? So, and. That crazy times. So.
Yeah, still living in, there's still people, a lot of people alive from those times. So it's still living on in the everyday teachings, let's say, social teachings. But Ireland's working really hard to get rid of this oppressive way. And I write quite a bit about that because I'm the first generation. We're supposed to be of age now where we make the rules and we are the politicians and all this, you know, we are the tastemakers and we're supposed to be in charge now and out with the old, in with the new, this kind of thing or whatever. So I'm kind of the perfect age of the generation, which is like to say we've had it, we experienced it. It's really unhealthy. And it helps nobody except those in the power. And so it's trying to get rid of all of that residual, trying to unlearn that bullshit, basically. Takes a very long time. But you can see it in like 18, 19-year-olds. They're like, no, we just don't put up with that. That's not even part of our language. And you're like, yes.
Yeah.
It's wonderful that you don't have to have that struggle.
Yeah, you have to get that out of the people's mind, and I guess the younger generation, as you mentioned it, they don't have a relation with that, so
it's ridiculous to them.
Yeah, they're totally different people, and they don't have this religious fight and this. Oh, come on! It's who wants that? Mm-hmm. Nobody.
Yeah.
We're talking about religion, so it's so crazy. Religion, as you mentioned, religion is it's so much pain. It's war, it's fight, and okay, to be honest, religion can be love and peace. Absolutely. But it's so much 50-50.
That's true. I'm very much in respect of people who it's their identity and it's their I got to respect people for that because I was once a believer and I know how much hope it gives you to believe in something.
That's the point.
It brings communities together, absolutely. So you can't say anything bad about that at all. The other experience of it, and you know, a good person in who loves their religion and looks at it with a critical mind, everybody's in agreement that, you know, there's some forms of power that just take control. And you put a uniform on somebody and they become themselves just uniformed. They become themselves magnified in a way. But how do we get onto
I don't know because we talked about Ireland, and yeah. I think I just mentioned that Freud had this quote like the Irish people are not able to or ready for a psychologist therapy, but yeah. I don't know. Okay.
No, they're not. They're getting better. That was the point, wasn't it? They're getting better.
you like U2?
Yes, I went to see them actually 4 years ago now, before Corona. They were playing in Berlin, and I've never seen them live before. And the first record that I bought from them was in 2011, so I'm a late bloomer. Obviously, growing up as an Irish person, there's you hear so much of their music just by existing.
Yeah,
it's always on the radio. They're everywhere. They're so famous. So there's a pride about it. And then I saw them live, and it was like, yeah. I mean, you cannot deny how good of a band they are after all this time. They still put on an absolutely mind-blowing show. They're one of the biggest bands in the whole world. Like, but they actually mean it. They were interested in the show, so it was, yeah.
Yeah, and I think The Edge is definitely, it's just my honest and humble opinion, but in my world, it's a definitely very great guitar player.
Yeah. He serves the song. He's a bit like he's like the drummer from the White Stripes. He really serves the song.
He's a little bit underrated, I think, in the guitar world, because he isn't that solo player, but he have much delay in his tone, and I think
he created a whole entire genre of sound.
Yeah, like, definitely.
And he really informed Brian Eno's sound as well, you know, and then that's informing how many other thousands and millions of other artists. I just love it. He knows what he can do, and he does it really well, and he's completely unique.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but isn't there another band except U2 which is so big and famous from Ireland like U2? Is there another band you know?
Yeah, there's tons of them. Thin Lizzy, Rory Gallagher.
I have to edit it. Shame on me. I did. Thin Lizzy is from Ireland. I didn't know. Oh my gosh.
Thin Lizzy's from Dublin.
So
Rory Gallagher's from Cork. Cranberries. The Coors. Dubliners, Clancy Brothers. Imelda May, Lisa Hannigan. There's like the Clancy Brothers were instrumental in Bob Dylan's music, for example.
Okay. Yeah.
I could sit here all day telling you about bands that have been influential in Ireland. From Ireland, and then they get stolen as English.
Fuck! Shame on me. I'm so good in geographic. The thing is, sometimes I'm the guy like, all right, I think this band like Thin Lizzy or Cranberries is just from the UK. So you know what I mean. Maybe I have to edit it. No, it's I don't edit the podcast. So
it's all good. Yeah, but in terms of bands like rock and roll, what's his name? Jimi Hendrix was quoted as saying, like, what somebody asked him in an interview, what does it feel like to be the best guitarist in the world? Which Jimi Hendrix is like one of the best, if not the most influential guitarist of all time.
Yep.
And he said, don't ask me, you better ask Rory Gallagher, because he loved Rory Gallagher and he learned a lot from him, you know.
That's pretty funny, because the same quote, Eddie Van Halen used the same quote when he was asked, how is it to be the greatest guitar player on earth? And Eddie answered it with, go and ask Steve Lukather. So I just thought it was the quote
by Eddie Van Halen, but it's from Hendrix. All right.
Yeah.
Oh, all right.
I mean, they probably every fucking guitarist in the world has said this. Don't ask me. You know, that's
yeah.
It's a nice thing to do, really, isn't it? Like, keeps you humble when you're thinking it, when you're not thinking like Kanye West that you're the best.
Yeah. But Jimi Hendrix is a good point, because Jimi Hendrix played Upside Down. You played Upside Down as well.
Yeah, Jimi Hendrix only he turned the strings to a left-hander way, but at the time there wasn't Fender wasn't making left-handed guitars.
And yeah,
he'd learned to just turn the strings upside down, and then I think shortly after they started.
It's like nowadays the lefty market is it isn't a good market. So it's so hard to get a good model left-handed version. So it's and it's so expensive. It's more expensive than a right-handed version. I don't know why, but it's the left-handed version is
a bit more care has to go into it. You have to change the machines most likely. I'm just trying to think like. To build a left-handed guitar is a completely different body shape. If it's built by humans, then they're so used to building right-handers all the time. It's just, you know, you could do it with your blindfolded.
Yeah, yeah.
With a left-hander, you have to approach the guitar completely different. So it's, and you don't do it that often. So I imagine it takes a little bit more detail and possibly changing a lot of machinery around to be capable to do the left-hander. I'm just trying to think of reasons why it would be more expensive.
But you're right. Hendrix just had a right-handed guitar and he put it to a left-handed guitar, but he didn't play upside down.
No.
It was it was Eric. Do you know Eric Gales? It's a U.S. guitar player, and he played upside down. So Eric Gales, he was signed by the same label from the Hendrix family. He was he is a kind of the legit Hendrix guitar player nowadays. So he's pretty awesome. But you play upside down, right?
Yes. Yeah. I just take a right-handed guitar and basically just flip it around and play left-handed. So it sounds quite different. There's a lot of open tone because I play from the smaller strings downwards. I have a lot of space to play around with bass because I've got my thumb and I've got the space of an octave basically. Power chords and stuff like that are easier because I've got my strong index finger and then my baby finger is left loose to do all the bass notes. So I think I find that I'm at an advantage. I find that my right hand is able to do a little bit more than a left-hander. I mean, also pretty fucking lazy, so I don't try as much as I should. But
who's not pretty fucking lazy? So everybody's fucking lazy. So
it just sounds very different. It sounds brighter, and to me, that I remember the first time that I heard it that way was a big deal for me because it kind of spoke to my outlook, my life outlook at a young age, which was something that I needed something a little bit different than the standard always. And it's not like a trying to be different or something. It's just, it speaks to me in a different way. So I've been playing the guitar for like, well, I mean, there's a, can I show you a picture of something?
Definitely. Yeah. It's, yeah.
Playing the guitar since before I'm this age.
How old are you?
In this picture,
yeah.
About two.
Okay. You start with the guitar at the age of two?
I started earlier. I got my guitar when I got a guitar when I was 6 months old, but it was just a fucking joke toy, you know.
Okay.
But I loved it, and it was never out of my hands. And ever since I could stand or walk or hold something, I had a guitar in my hand, and I love it. I take it like it's my buddy, you know, it's my friend. Over time I've learned a lot of different instruments. I love instruments to death. Like I love rhythm. I love pianos. I love hammering instruments, and I'm learning the trumpet at the moment. But the guitar is just it. Everybody knows the guitar.
Yeah.
Everybody, I think. Yeah. I feel like.
For me, the guitar is like it's like English. Everybody knows English. So you know what I mean. Everybody can speak a little bit English and everybody can play a little bit guitar. It's like this famous language everybody knows. So,
right. Yeah. Shatter that it's not Esperanto, what? Yeah. Yeah. Do you play other instruments? How do you feel about the guitar?
I started with guitar. It was at the age of 13.
Nice.
Unfortunately, not with 6 months ago. at the age of six months. But it was like your story. When I was 13, it was my birthday, and I got a toy guitar. It was a joke by my stepfather. And I was like, a couple of days before I get 13, I mentioned that I wanted to play guitar. And he was like, so yeah, blah blah, Paul want to play guitar. So he pranked me, and she had this a toy guitar for me, and I was like, oh come on, I want to play real guitar, I want to play real guitar. So yeah, and then a few weeks later I got a Epiphone SG.
Nice.
Because it was an interview with Tom DeLonge, I don't know how to pronounce it, the former guitar player of Blink-182.
Okay.
And yeah, he said in an interview that his father just found a guitar in the garbage. So it was an old guitar, and then Tom DeLonge got this guitar, and then he started guitar all by himself. And I was like, okay, I'm like Tom DeLonge, and I can do it like Tom DeLonge.
Yeah.
And that was the first step. So I just teach it by myself. The first six months, and then I really, really, really needed a teacher, and then it goes the way. And then I started just a little bit, because I'm a big fan of Dave Grohl, of Nirvana and Foo Fighters. I just wanted to play drums. So, and I started a little bit playing drums, but I just quit a couple of a month ago when I started it. So yeah, I'm just guitar player, a little bit bass and a little bit drums. So classic. Yeah, I cannot sing, unfortunately, so I just
takes practice.
I know, but you know, it's I've got no time, we've got so much to do.
Yeah.
And yeah,
you don't have to. You know. Yeah, I mean, you can pick up an instrument any time in your life, can't you? I love that about it. Like my father is learning recorder at the moment. It's
recorder.
Recorder. Can't see this. The Baroque flauta, the fucking plastic kids thing.
Okay.
Really, really cute. Like my father turned 75 this year, and he's learning the fucking children's flute. It's extremely sweet.
That's sweet. That's...
Yeah, he can start anytime he wants to. It's lovely. Yeah.
So you play other instruments besides guitar?
Yeah, I'll pick up. I'll get a tune out of anything. I love instruments, and I think the feeling is mutual. I find that instruments are pretty good to me. Like I can pick up anything and try and get a tune out of it. I will try and get a tune out of anything. My big love is is rhythm and breathing. So I love, for example, like trumpet is, blows my mind now. I love playing trumpet at the moment.
But isn't it hard? Isn't it hard to play at the when you started? I think.
Yeah, it's very complex. Once you getting the hang of it is you make so many mistakes. You really have to be angry with yourself about making mistakes. You have to just laugh at the mistakes because they're so fucking, they're sweet. Mistakes are really sweet on the trumpet, and I've got like a really nice little.
that's a cute buddy. Trumpet.
it's an amateur's trumpet I got like nearly 20 years ago, and I started playing 2 years ago. And I love my other favorite instrument. I'm at the moment I'm set up my drum kit in my house in the country, and I'm going to like dedicate, I really want to be a drummer in a couple of years. I want to be able to record entire albums just alone and be a competent drummer. That's one of my aims. I think my favorite instrument is bass, actually.
Bass. Okay.
So it's much loaded information in such a, in, it's just so much information in one instrument.
Yeah.
But obviously the guitar is more versatile than a bass. There's many basses, you have to plug them in, or it's an acoustic bass, and it's just a bit different. But bass for me, when it works, is like blows my tiny mind every time I pay attention to it. Yeah.
One of my favorite, all-time favorite female bass player is Michelle Negligello. Do you know Michelle Negligello?
Oh, yeah. Holy shit.
My God. Woman is so amazing. She can play bass like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
And then she sings, and I'm, wow.
Yeah. Oh, she's
favorite album is, what is it? Is it Beyond by Passion or Passion by Be? I don't know, but it's a mid-90s record. Mm-hmm. And it's, well, it's
Beyond. No, yeah, that's, I'm thinking of somebody else. What is it? Jesus Has Made Me the Man of My Dreams is one of my favorite ones. That album, oh my God, it's ridiculous. She's mind-blown, and then her lyrics are also really passionate and flirtatious and sexy and like dark and sad. Yeah. And she covers a lot. I've forgotten about Michelle and the Gaocello. She's so good. Thank you for reminding me. Just
no problem. For all my listeners out there, I will mention Michelle in the show notes, because the surname is a little bit pretty hard to
Michelle and again
Negligello. Yeah.
How do you say it?
I think it's Negligello, but oh, I what would you say? Is it, I just guess. So it's I think the her surname is so hard to pronounce.
I'll find out what it is. That's only respectful to know her last name and how to say it, I suppose, isn't it?
Definitely. That's maybe I should ask her if she want to join my podcast. That was
fucking absolutely ask her. Can I be on the podcast too at the same time?
Definitely, we'll make a nice Zoom conference. But I love her skills, and that's, she plays bass like you should play bass. So it's you don't should play bass like a guitar. That's not the goal. You have to, that's so much groove, so much rhythm, and so much deep and fat tones in a bass. So I love bass too, but I'm not, unfortunately, I'm not a bass player. I'm just a shitty, I'm not a shitty guitar player. I'm a good guitar player, but I'm a shitty bass player.
World, isn't it?
When I play bass, I'm thinking of, I play guitar, but minus two strings, and that's not right.
How does that work then?
It's not working.
Do you listen to Kruangbane? Kruangbin. I think they're from Los Angeles. They're this kind of very surfer chilled 1970s, like almost like really fucking excellent porn music or something.
Okay. I don't know the guys, unfortunately. What was it? Is it
Kruangbin? So one word, Kruangbin. And they're going for about 5 or 6 years, I think. And they're playing in front of, I don't know, like 8,000 to 15,000 people. They're excellent. It's a lot of it is instrumental music. And the bass player of that band is, they're a three piece, and the bass player, she's outrageous. She's such a fucking tasteful bass player. I must look up her name actually. But yeah, going from like your guitar podcast, you know, to end up talking most of the time about bass. I love it.
It's okay. It's we have to. It's cheers to all the bass players out there. I mean, it's a guitar cast, and it's a little bit of bass podcast, so it's okay. Nice. We can talk about bass.
Do you know, piano?
Don't we shouldn't talk about piano. I cannot play piano, and I'm not the piano guy. Never been, and I don't know. I respect to all people who can play nice piano, but I'm the stringed guy, and
Do you know what?
Yeah, sorry. So what did you say?
Do you like synths?
Yeah. 80s vibes, 90s vibes. So synth music is love it.
Yeah, it's good. Yeah. Good. Yeah. Sorry, what were you going to ask me?
Do you know the band Warpaint?
Yeah. I've still not seen them live. They're fucking brilliant, and they are getting better with time. I'm really glad that they're still churned, like they're getting more interested in their music writing.
Yeah. They released a new album a couple of weeks ago. And I was like, I thought, or maybe they broke up, or there isn't a new record anymore. And then out of blue, they've got a new album. And I was like, oh, nice. I like Warpaint. I like the first album. And the second one, the self-titled album, was killer.
Yeah.
And so I'm...
Yeah.
I love the band. Saw them in Cologne about... It was 2009 or 2010. By CO Pop, the CO Pop Festival,
yeah. And they're still so going. Good. How long are they going now? They're on, they must have about 4 or 5 albums now, I think.
Yeah, I think, yeah, 4 albums, yeah, right.
Yeah, cool. Who else do you listen to?
Female bands, just male bands, or just bands and music?
Bands.
Everything, bands, okay. I like... all-time favorite band. I'm the 80s shred guitar guy, so nice. I like Extreme. You know Extreme?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah. So I like Nuno Bettencourt. I like the Deftones. So when we step to the 2000 years, yeah, definitely Deftones.
Pony is an incredible album. Isn't it White
Pony? Sorry, the White Pony, yeah. I think the White Pony, 20 and 2 years anniversary for about 4 days or 5 days.
Wow.
22 years. Oh, 22 years, yeah. Yeah.
We're getting old. Time is passing. Really? Yeah. Oh, wow. I must tell my brother that we share that album together. Yeah.
And it's a killer album. It's one of the most emo core at a... It's one of the first emo core records, I think. So Deftones are still one of my favorite bands. It's a hard question because it's like, tell me your favorite joke, and then you have to think about it. Okay, what's my favorite joke?
Okay, so if you were getting ready to go out to a concert, right? So you want to listen to a band that gets your energy going. that you're going to stay up all night, and you have a band that you want to put into a good mood so that you can go and view another band and get your ears ready.
Mm-hmm.
Is that, what band is that? Oh, sorry. You can think about that. If you were to press play on your CD player or on your vinyl or whatever, on your streaming, what would it play right now?
Oh, such a hard question. That's a good question. Do you know it?
On my Spotify?
Yeah.
Spotify.
Or CD player?
In my Spotify. Yeah, no, I'm listening to a podcast now, actually.
Which podcast is it?
He's called Michael Sandel. He's a philosopher. He's called the Public Philosopher. And the program is called Should Universities Give Preference to Applicants Who From a Privileged Background? From poor backgrounds. So it's
okay.
He's always talking about class and privilege. Michael Sandel, he's really amazing. Yeah.
All right, I've got an answer.
Mm-hmm.
Nirvana.
Ah, nice. Which? Yeah. What?
Okay, it's impossible to see Nirvana again. I know.
Yeah.
But it's just a question. So I think one of my favorite Seattle bands is definitely Nirvana and the Stone Temple Pilots. Sorry, original formation. With Scott Weiland on the vocals, and Stone Temple Pilots. Nirvana. I'm a really grunge guy too. Besides 80s music, I love the grunge bands. I'm not the Pearl Jam guy. Never. Not really. Soundgarden, it's okay, but more Nirvana and Stone Temple Pilots. Yeah.
Did you like Pantera?
That's creepy, because when you asked me the question, I just wanted to say Pantera. That was the first band I got in mind, because I'm a big fan of Dimebag Darrell, because he's a killer guitar player, or he was a killer guitar player. I know Phil Anselmo is difficult because of his political direction, or his, he's...
I don't know anything about him.
Okay, he drink a little bit too much, and it's a strange guy. So, but Pantera is one of my favorite metal bands till now.
Cool.
So that's four piece band, and that's so fat. They've just got one guitar player and they don't need a second one. So it's just, wow, what a metal band. And I'm the old school metal guy, and I've just got two bands in my metal universe, and that's Pantera and Meshuggah, that band, from Sweden, and they're for me the fattest metal bands. So, but yeah, I definitely like Pantera.
Mm-hmm.
It's so much, the Far Beyond Driven is like, wow, so much anger, so much, wow.
Oh, it's definitely impressive. Very impressive. Yeah, Meshuggah is like a little bit like free jazz for me.
Yeah. Low tune free jazz. Yeah.
Yeah.
With 8-string guitars.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you hear about, what the fuck is their name? Feist came together with another very famous Canadian metal band, and they swapped albums. So they took... They did a cover, an entire album cover of her album, which I think was metal.
Okay.
And she did a cover of their album. And it was just such a cool idea, because Feist is like pure folk, you know.
Okay.
Like pop folk, let's say, but she's very folky, and I just love that idea of her. She's such a big metal fan that she just covered a whole famous metal band's album, and they covered her album, and it was like, when these worlds collide. Yeah,
nice.
I the name of the band, yeah.
What
a shit story.
Easy. Just what one I say. let me, I'm just about the question. I just mentioned Nirvana, Sound Temple Pilots, okay, Pantera. You know what? I just want to see the Foo Fighters again. Yeah.
Oh, stop. I mean, yeah, that's a whole new world now, isn't it? Taylor Hawkins is gone. Like, it's so.
I was so shocked.
Yeah, I love that guy. He's a fucking great drummer, and I loved his honesty in interviews. He was how he spoke about his connection with other musicians in the industry, and nobody ever had a bad thing to say about that guy, and all his power and his love for Foo Fighters. He'd be really missed as a drummer. Such a good drummer. He loved music, and he just wanted to do what's best for the musician. Alanis Morissette must have been heartbroken. He used to play with her, like.
He was her drummer for the first sessions or the first albums she recorded. So I like Alanis Morissette. I like her music. I like Björk.
Björk is one of my top three artists. Yeah. So I'm a massive fan. I always say that if I was ever going to work with anybody, it'd be Björk.
Okay. Good aim.
In any capacity, just to be in a room and ask her to explain her favorite instrument to me for 10 minutes, you know, just to experience her mind thinking out loud in person would be, like she's an absolute spaceship. She's a total spaceship of a person. Yeah. She doesn't have any rules. And I don't think she cares for rules. She's really supported and feels free to experience and blend, like blend not only genre, but to invent genre and to just create something that really lives and blend it with different mixed media and inventing jobs for people and inventing instruments and I could talk about Björk all day. Yeah, big fan.
Maybe there's a Björk podcast out there, and you didn't mention it.
yeah.
We should start a Björk podcast just about Björk and her music and her experience. Yeah. And
we wouldn't be the first. So you like her too, yeah?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Says, and what do you like about her, really?
I like the sound. I like the videos. So I'm an old school guy. And the what isn't it? Is it Army of Me? This video when she drives a truck or something, and it's art. So yeah. I like the ambience. I like the sounds. When I was a kid or a teenager, one of my the early Slipknot thing. I'm an early Slipknot fan, so not the latest records or just the first three records that are my favorite Slipknot records. And I just read an interview with Jim Root, and I was like, I was a teenager, and for me, Slipknot was they are the bad metal guys. They've got mask on it, and they eat children and drink blood, you know what I mean. So I was a teenager, and then Jim Root mentioned that Björk is one of his favorite artists, and I was like, Björk, what? And I was a teenager, so and then I listened to Björk, and then I know what he mean when Jim Root said, okay, Björk is one of his favorite artist. And
she's one of the, she is an artist that will, long after she's gone, will continue to influence people in many different ways, because she works so diligently and she lives for her art. She goes beyond rules and beyond any any kind of prescribed way that an artist is supposed to be. She is an absolute, you know, she's an inventor, and she's what's a person called when they travel across, the first people that found fucking what's it called when you like, what is Christopher Columbus, for example?
Bastard. Inventor. I don't know what you mean.
She's basically that. Like, she's done much more than most musicians. She just seems to have endless time to explore and not just scratch the surface, to really take her explorations really deeply. She writes thesis on including, like, incorporating music into a computer world somehow. That's a very bad description of it, but she's closest to making computers become humans, I think. How she incorporates both worlds. She wants to create a world. Yeah, I mean, if anybody who doesn't like Björk is like, I mean, you haven't paid attention.
Go out and listen to Björk, definitely.
Yeah, even read about her life or what she's done, and you'll be inspired.
Or download her app. She's got an app, an own app. I don't know if this app exists anymore. But a couple of years ago, I saw she's got an app, and this app was just like a kind of a universe map. It was an art map. I was like, all right, that's pretty awesome. Yeah.
Yeah, she's just inventing worlds based around her ideas that she has through music. Like, she just encompasses life. She invents life. Who the fuck is doing that? You know what I mean? And she has her collaborators. She chooses very, very interesting people to collaborate, like Chris Cunningham, for example, who did. Is it Chris Cunningham? His last name's Cunningham, the videographer that she worked with on those pagan poetry and, like,
okay,
you know that video with the two robots making love? And Michel Gondry and stuff like that. She tends to work with musicians that have a lust for life. And she's invented her own music theory. Give me a break, Björk. Save a little bit of talent for the rest, you know. Yeah, she's too talented.
Damn too talented. Yeah. And all right, we have to just to go into the little nerdy stuff right now. We have to talk a little bit about equipment, just a little bit. What do you have? What do you play?
Well, what I play and what I use.
I see guitar. On your, is this it?
This is my new little baby. I bought this when I gave up drink. She's just a little child's parlor guitar.
Yeah.
It has
nice
tiny little sweet sound. It really. Yeah. It's a beautiful. The action on it's amazing. It's really tough. It's from 65. It's a Suzuki child's guitar, and I love it. In general, I'm acoustic guitar wise. I'm endorsed by Lakewood Guitars, which is a
congratulations.
I love them so dearly. I play Lakewood Guitars. I have here. I'll show you my. They're mostly all packed away at the moment, but
I see a bass. It could be Yamaha or Ibanez, right? It's Yamaha.
And I love that fucking bass. It sounds very 70s. It's got a real thud to it. I've got a little mandolin there, my Gibson SG.
Yeah.
I've got a 50 euro Stag Fender, which I bring to the park when it's really hot or when it's raining, you know, it's just to play with.
Yeah.
I've got a Nord keyboard, Stage 2.
That's a standard, right? I think the Nord Stage, what is it? The Nord,
Nord Stage 2. Yeah.
It's Stage 2. It's like when you play on tour and you're the bass player, you have to play an Ampeg SVT. Yeah. And for the key player, you have to play Nord Stage 2, right? That's everybody's got Nord. Yeah.
Yeah, it's basically the Fender amp of
Of keyboards.
It's reliable, and it's very capable instrument. It's very inspiring, actually, instrument. It's what it's capable is quite a lot. But my amp wise, I'm endorsed by Engel Amps.
Nice.
I've only got this one amp. I've given away every other amp I've ever owned.
What did you own before Engel Amps? What did you play?
The Roland Cube bass, fucking Cube amps with like chorus and delay. I'll be honest. I mean, I could collect a lot more stuff, but I'm very conscious of waste.
Of storage and have to store something. Yeah.
Yeah. Yes. I prefer to play things and wear things until they're dead. And also like pedals and stuff like that. I really buy very, very few pedals because I think I like to keep it very simple. I'll show you my pedal board. My pedal board is what I love. I've broken it down over 10 years to a very simplified gear. I'll show you it now. Hang on.
Yeah, easy. So guys, I'm sorry, it's not a video cast, it's just a podcast, so I will explain what Wallace is showing me right now. There she is.
It's stuck. It's stuck.
You don't, easy. I just said to the guys out there, apologize because it's not a video cast, it's a podcast, so I have to explain what you what you're showing to me.
I apologize. So in terms of pedals, I play Octavers, Octaver, a delay, Grand Canyon delay, which is a looper and a delay, reverb, modulator, all in one. It's quite a powerful pedal. It's been out about 6 years and I would highly recommend it.
Yeah.
It's a little bit gentle. You have to be a little bit gentle with it. The knobs could be a bit more hard wearing.
Which brand is it?
It's from Electroharmonics.
Oh, okay. Yeah. They made solid stuff, so it's a good company.
Good stuff, yeah, good stuff.
Yeah.
I have a Ditto loop pedal, which I use for vocals. I do a lot of, and not a lot of it. I use it very sparingly, but I loop my vocals and I put it through octavers and harmonizers and
nice.
I try not to use that too much because it gets very tired very quickly. So what I do is I try and keep it like complex and I show off basically. It's just
fucking shit.
And aside from that, the gear that I use to record with is also very simple. I use Beyer Dynamic microphones, pencil mics, I got like a full set of like professional microphones when I was started out. Beyer Dynamic were kind enough to sponsor me, and I've been using them for like 15 years. I know them like the back of my hand. I use an Apollo X8 interface, a MacBook Pro. The microphone that I'm using here right now is an SE. It was 89 fucking euro. And it's
historic.
It's amazing. I can put the trumpet on it. Sweetwater reviews go crazy about it because it's actually really, really good mic.
Okay.
What else? My gear is really, I have so much gear that I've given away, you know?
Maybe it's good when it's simple, so you don't have to.
Really?
I'm not the storage guy as well, so when I don't need anything, I just sell it, and I'm not a collector, so.
Yeah. Yeah.
I was a collector a couple of years ago because I worked in a guitar shop, and then it's like you work in Candyland, and unfortunately, very expensive.
Yeah.
And there's the point where you are so exhausted by all the equipment and all the new stuff, new pedals, new guitars. Mm-hmm. And I was like, okay, when I don't play it, I will sell it. So.
Yeah,
I just got four or five guitars or six guitars. Mm-hmm. And I'm not really a collector. So I feel you.
Yeah. It's good to really know what you're playing.
Yeah.
Because the instruments change over time. The guitars that I own actually too many guitars. For me, in my opinion, I own one guitar for every album that I've made. Mm-hmm. So Lakewood made a guitar for me for every album I've made, so I have seven Lakewoods, right?
Nice.
I am not complaining. I treat these are my babies. They each of them have personalities.
They're equipped with LRBX preamps.
Yeah, the Anthem.
Yeah, and Anthem SL or the big version where you can mix. The two microphones,
the piezo and the body.
I love LRBX. They sound so organic, and you can, that's the secret
really
of LRBX.
We were lucky that actually when LRBX were designing, they were designing those pickup systems. They were working with Lakewood specifically for a pickup system for Lakewood.
Okay.
We had so many troubles. I had so many troubles with the previous systems, and Lakewood are amazing. They always ask you, what do you think of this? What should we change? Where? Tell me what you think. And you take some of their equipment home and you play it for, you know, or whatever. And they're amazing because they work so closely together. And basically they came together with LRBX to develop the Anthem system.
Uh-huh.
Well, that's kind of one thing that's very close with Anthem, and they were asking us, you know, LRBX is developing this new system. What do you think it should do? And myself and probably all of their artists came together and just told them everything that we think that they should develop. And lo and behold, that's the Anthem system. So I love those little things that, you know, in a little way that maybe you help develop something, obviously just by playing. And I was one of the first women endorsees. There was two other women endorsees on Lakewood Guitars, and they ask us how we feel about it because our body form is completely different also, you know.
What kind of body form do you have?
I mean, my hand structure, I loved Lakewood's, but the initial guitar,
they've got a wider fingerboard, right? So
so they began to develop a smaller fingerboard that has as broad sound, and basically just to develop into a less Spanish neck and and just to make it a little bit more parlor or something like that.
Yeah, okay.
And also developing smaller guitars. I've been asking them to make smaller guitars all the time because, you know, travel, and you can still pack a real fucking punch in having like a very small bodied guitar.
Yeah.
Like I can play it, but I don't want to play a dreadnought body because it's just too fucking big for me, you know.
It's a dreadnought, so it's like the name, so it's a dreadnought guitar. Or a grand auditorium or a jumbo body size. It's too big.
It's just too big.
The sound is amazing, but I'm more the triple O or double O or O guy. I like the cowboy or cowgirl guitars. So just for the couch. And I like the small bodies, definitely.
Yeah, yeah. And we find that we're getting more into it. I'd really love them to develop a guitar where the neck dislocates. Something where you can take an actual guitar into a case with you and travel around the world.
Yeah.
I keep asking them about that, but you know, I mean, they're their own company. They have their own style.
That's the company from the Czech Republic. It's called Furch Guitars. You know Furch Guitars? They're from the Czech Republic, and they build a special travel guitar.
Okay. You can,
yeah, that's pretty awesome. It's called, is it Little Sister?
Okay, I'm writing this down.
You can remove the whole neck.
Oh, cool.
With a snapping system, and that's the secret. You can remove the neck and can put it into the body. Mm-hmm. And the strings are still on the neck and on the body, and when you put it back in the neck pocket, it's in tune.
Yep.
Wow. That's crazy. It's a travel guitar. So
right, all right, cool. Yeah. I'm gonna look that up first. Little Sister Czech.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's Little Sister, but when you just type Furch travel guitar and you will definitely find it. So
gladly.
And it's a solid guitar. It's not plywood. It's massive. So it's really expensive, I guess. I think about maybe not exactly 2,000, but a little bit under 2,000 euros. So but they make nice guitars. Yeah,
great.
But Lakewood as well, for German company, and LRBX are so. I just say I'm so into German sometimes.
Yeah.
The most equipped or the most pickup for acoustic guitars, when a customer comes in and asks me, okay, Paul, I want a nice acoustic guitar pickup in my acoustic guitar, what would you recommend?
Mm-hmm.
Definitely LRBX Anthem.
Yeah.
Countless of acoustic guitars I've put into acoustic guitars. LRBX is this.
Yeah. It connects with the actual sound of the guitar.
Yeah.
It's a reflection of the actual sound of the guitar. There's no EQ boosting, no massaging. It is just what it is. It's
They got this true mic system, and you've got the nice sound of your guitar, and you can bring it through the amp to the audience.
Yeah.
Cheers to LRBX. You really do a good job.
Yeah. Oh, it's good. And they're worldwide now, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because it used to be like Fishman's and Samson, and that was it. And you had like two choices of pickups. I mean, even in our short life, like what we've seen, what pedals can do. I recently bought a pedal. I needed an EQ pedal, and they didn't have anything new in the shop at the moment. So I was like, look, I just need something. So give me the fucking, the Boss EQ pedal. And the guy was like, no, we have something else. And he gave me this small German company. And the pedal is €100, and it has a DI out, a mic DI out. It has an auxiliary out. It has headphones out. It has chorus reverb, EQ, notch filter, looper, freeze. And
for €100, it's okay.
That's €100, and I was like, €100 10 years ago wouldn't even get me wouldn't even fix my old pedal, you know.
Yeah.
So we're moving into a new age of trying to get as much out of your pedal as possible. If you're going to make something, you might as well try and get as much out of it as possible. So it's nice being technologically minded and trying to stay away from waste, which is, you know, that's a big thing with my career. I know that my carbon footprint is high from the amount of travel that I've done.
Uh-huh.
Therefore, I don't own a car, and I'm trying not to ever have to own a car. And, you know, I offset my emissions in so many other different ways, and I don't buy a lot of new things. I buy mostly secondhand things. I don't like buying new things, actually. I like things to have a life, so that I'm not creating more waste on the world. Also making fucking merchandise, for example, I'm with this new record. I go to my company, merchandise company, and you go downstairs into the basement where all of my stuff is, and I just see the amount of shit that we make as humans. Nobody needs all of this stuff, you know?
Yeah, it's like humans want to have new. They want to have more.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm like that sometimes, so, not always, but yeah, that's merchandise. But yeah, when you play a concert, people are going to buy merchandise. They want merchandise from Alice Bird. So, you need it. It's hard to make second-hand merchandise, you know?
Yeah.
Quite impossible.
I mean, selling clothes and stuff like that at the concerts is interesting, because it's like, look, I'm never going to wear this anymore, so you can have it, or clothes exchange or something like that. Or I don't know if you're like me, I've kept boxes and boxes of memories that I from my childhood on music concerts and stuff like that, and I move on pretty quickly. I don't like to keep things anymore. I like to experience the memory and go back and experience it heavily, but I really don't like living in the past at all.
Yeah.
So I'm going to start taking things like that with me on tour and selling, like, personal items that I own that are sitting in boxes for fucking years or whatever as merchandise, rather than, you know, here's a t-shirt.
I'm the typical merchandise guy. So when I'm at a concert and I went to the merch stand, or go to the merch stand, and then I'm like, okay, I buy this shirt, and then we'll wear it about 2 or 3 times, and then the shirt's going to be my bed or my evening shirt. Yeah. Same story every time, and I don't learn it. So, I 2 weeks ago I was I saw the band Mastodon, and I'm a huge Mastodon fan, and I was there with my employee. His name is Karma. Cheers to Karma, like the Karma is the nicest name I know. And Karma and I, we went to the merch store, to the merch stand, and I bought a Mastodon T-shirt, and I was pretty fucked up, because I washed it, and now it's about 2 sizes smaller. It's yep, and I washed it correct. What's wrong with the with the merch and
you can write
the companies?
You should write to them.
Yeah, definitely.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. I mean, if they care about their customers, they will.
I don't know. I would guess they will. They go fuck yourself. And
no, they give a shit. It's Mastodon, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, they're good guys. They absolutely.
You know the guys? Yeah. Or
no, but they have a very good name on the music scene. Like, they are not assholes. They are very, very. They care a lot, actually. So I think if you wrote to them, it would be heard, definitely. Yeah. Okay. And actually,
I will let you know.
Yeah, and I'm pretty sure that it's Mastodon that Feist did the record with, that they exchanged albums. I'm pretty sure.
Ah, isn't it? All right.
Yeah. Good guys. Yeah.
I love the music so bad. And all right, I will write to Mastodon, and maybe they will send me a new T-shirt.
I mean, you should be heard, yeah.
Yeah, I like the shirt. There's a yellow dinosaur on it, so I'm not the dinosaur guy, but I was like, okay, I've got the I can choose between the dinosaur shirt or the strange whatever art print shirt with the tour dates on it, and I. was like, okay, I just bought the, I will buy the dinosaur shirt. Yeah. All right, when will we, you play the next show in Germany or in the one?
Oh, so I start a tour in Germany and, oh my God, I'm traveling. Summer festivals are happening soon. And then after that, it's like, I'll tell you now, I start in Bremen on the 23rd of September and I'm playing all through, I'm playing until the 20th of October. So I'm on the road for like a month, 2 months.
Okay.
2 months.
In Europe or just in Germany?
Just in Germany, but
nice.
That's I'm playing like for a month and a half in Germany, and then the tour continues all around Europe.
Okay.
And then it continues all around Europe until the end of November, start of December.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Nice. So you start in the late summer with the German tour.
Yeah.
I will check the tour dates out and I will definitely come.
Yeah, I totally invite you, darling. I mean, of course. Where are you based right now, actually?
It's West Germany. I'm from Essen.
Lovely. Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Hello.
I think you will definitely play in Cologne, I guess, or...
Yeah, and Münster.
Oh, Münster. Okay, nice.
Yeah, yeah. I'm playing in this venue that I haven't played in a very long time. I mean, you know it, obviously. I'm playing in Gloria and in Gleist 22. You know Gleist
22? Nice. Yeah, I know the venue, yeah.
Oh, fucking sweat fest. I've always had very good concerts in that place, actually, yeah.
Nice. I will definitely come and I will take some nice pictures of your gear, of your equipment, and of your legwork. Yeah.
Sure.
And nice. Wallace, thank you very much.
Thank
for
you,
this
Paul.
Nice conversation. I'm sorry again for my shitty English. Thank you very much. That's what I wanted to hear.
No, you did really well. I mean, you're perfect English.
I was so nervous, but I think it was the first time for my now English podcast. Every episode is now in English.
Yeah.
So just have a nice evening.
You too.
You guys out there, check out Wallace Bird and just buy merch, just buy her music, listen to her music. And thank you very much for this totally cool conversation.
Thank you very much.
All right. I hope we will hear us maybe next week, maybe in 2 weeks, maybe in a once, I don't know. Have a nice evening, have a nice Thursday, and see you next time or hear next time. Bye-bye.
Dieser Gitarcast wurde dir präsentiert von Paul's Repair Shop. Better call Paul, weil du deine Gitarre liebst.